beside you.
I'll only say the following. When I came in on Friday morning, you know, I'll show you pictures later of the Mashpia spoke and the why you were spent the fortune. If you should see, now they're taking it apart.
But it's still there, left over.
So when I came in Friday morning, the men, there wasn't a drop of chalent left. The two big pots, all was on the bottom that you couldn't get out. Today I walked in, the girls, last night, there's more chalent left than they ate. You follow? So it tells you something. I just told, I don't want my wife to hear, but I just told someone who works here, I'm very, very nice fellow. I told him, we were talking about the chalent left over. I said, my wife has been on a diet for 60 years. You follow me? There's never a time with women where they're not dieting. And all right, I should learn from them, but the flesh is weak.
Who spoke last night?
The Mashpia, and he wasn't allowed, and Yemima, Ms. Rothschild Mizrahi, they had heavyweight people there. Anyone else speak? Yomo, anyone else? You don't know. And the Yoma told me the Mashpia had to wait outside till they called him in to speak, and then he spoke, and then he came out again. In other words, no men were allowed in. And here, I spoke yesterday, I'll speak in a minute maybe, why you uptown is shaking with the mixed Shabbaton. So, but I have to say, halachal mice, if you ask me, I'm not opposed to a mixed Shabbaton. I mean, particularly the dean's reception was for juniors. You know, at that age, you're old enough to go out. You should be going out. But don't do it uptown. Do it the Stern College, all right, fine. But uptown is the yeshiva. It's a little bit different. You have youngsters there. You have the high school kids there. I don't know. Anyway, I had a lot of nachat. That's my opinion. I don't want to repeat what I said yesterday. I told the whole story of YU's history with the dean's reception, which does affect the history of YU. Chaim Dov Keller, Rabbi Keller, is quite a story. But a Talmud sent me a printout of Harry Merrill's website, Emet V'Amuna. And I have to say, it's word by word, we said the same thing, exactly the same conclusion. All right, you can have a Shabbaton, but it shouldn't be uptown in the yeshiva proper. All right, let me begin. Today is Monday, February 18th, 2019, and two of us have big smachot this week, Morty Carrigan, grandson getting married tomorrow night, and
Tonight,
Monday night, Mazal Tov, and I have a Simcha Wednesday, but I'll be out of Yerushalayim Wednesday, Thursday, and then again Shabbos, Sheva Brachos. I'll be in Haifa, and Sheva Brachos is closer, thank God. And Baruch Hashem, we should only, there's so much news when you grow older already. Each day I learn someone else died, so yesterday, today, if those of you who know the name Dean Bacon, he was Dean of Yeshiva College, and his daughter is the most famous woman in the YU administration, most famous person, I should say. She's Dean of Yeshiva College and Stern College. Her uncle died, Dean Bacon's brother, 103 years old. Armon Hanatziv, Talpiot Mizrach, that area, very active in the Young Israel. I was there with him a year ago. He was fine, perfect mind. But it's sad for me because his wife was not at the funeral. His wife is Dr. Sam Dershowitz's sister. And the fact she was not at the funeral shows me already that she, ill health. I'll get more details tomorrow because Sam, he was at the funeral obviously, but his sister was not there. He says he'll find out all details today. So let's talk about the smachot. And I'd like to make a deal with the Rebbeinu Shloimeh Mobila Hamavat LaNetzach Umach Hashem Elokim Dima B'Al Pnei Adam, but we're only mortals and we don't run the world. We're just his humble servants. Coming back to the Shayurim, saying hello to everyone in front of me and everyone across the world, some interesting comments. This is more in the Sunday class. It's from Rabbi Dr. Lieutenant Colonel Mark Weiner. Thanks, it was great to be back at Gross. Please pass this on to Rebbe. Thanks to the Mesirat Nefesh of earlier chaplains like Rabbi Rubin, things are easier in recent times for chaplains and Jewish soldiers. We now have kosher meals ready to eat available anywhere in the world through the military supply system. All right, that's an achievement. Although it's a complicated issue and often difficult, mechitzar are now sometimes able to work. Often, some mixed area initially might be needed to be available for those who might make an issue out of the mechitzar. The percentage of Orthodox chaplains in the military is much higher nowadays, and it has an impact. All right, halacha l'maisa, I'll only say about the mechitzar that you can view the army as a temporary situation. When we have a house of mourning, lo aleinu, no one ever brought, as far as I know, I mean, there can be frumkeit goes crazy, but I've never yet seen anyone bring a mechitz into a house of mourning. I just want to go one side. If they really object, don't stop the service, fine, make a third like a conservadox temple. There were many temples, I don't know if you recall, I recall from the rabbinate where there was men, women, and mixed men and women together. So a chaplain, I wouldn't make a major issue out of that because I can understand the problem. It's one chaplain and yet people are coming from many different backgrounds. I think halacha l'maisa, that would be the proper approach. I know also when you're hiking, you go hiking, let's say in Eretz Yisrael, time for mincha, so the men and women separate, but no one sets up a mechitza. But if he says you can even have a mechitza, see, that would be fabulous. That's, wow. That really is an achievement in the army. All right. Relating to Sempo Sugihara, my Talmud, Rabbi David Hachheiser, who today lives in Beit Shemesh, spoke with me. I couldn't believe this, but it's laughable. What was the famous movie that Israel made, that made it world famous in the 60s already? What was it called? What was it called? The guy with the trees, who started it? Topel, could be. Yeah, that was Topel, Chaim Topel. Anyway, a very famous movie about the absorption of the immigrants was made down south in Be'er Sheva. Salo Shabbati, correct. In Salo Shabbati, there's an unbelievable scene. He's working for the JNF, and people are coming, and they have the sign up in honor of Dr. and Mrs. Charles Hexter. And the Hexters are coming from America, and they're so happy. They walk away quickly, change the sign, the Tarragons. You won't believe this. Sempo Sugihara, well, we know who he was, Yad Vashem, what they did for him. And finally, in 1985, a grove was planted in his memory near Beit Shemesh. Hundreds of trees were donated by his friends and businessmen in Japan in his memory. In January, Nabuki Sugihara, Sugihara's son, visited Israel with his family and wanted to visit the memorial forest, but was unable to locate it. Attorney David Shaw, whose father was saved by Sugihara, investigated and discovered the forest had been uprooted a few years ago in order to build a residential neighborhood in Beit Shemesh, Hefzibah. What's that, a section, Hefzibah? After the discovery came to light, the JNF sent a letter of apology. They promised to investigate the matter and to plant a new grove in his memory. I would suggest that descendants, you're one of them, form an organization and once a week send someone to check that the new grove is still there. But there you have it, Sempo Sugihara. All right, let's get back to the serious world, which also, I met Dov and I was laughing. Dov will understand why I was laughing. We were talking about the creation of the modern Orthodox synagogue. And we'll finish it out today and then we'll move further. I have to admit these particular shiurim are not just fabulously interesting, but it's us. I mean, it's the world in which I grew up, and I model HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm able to put it together properly. And again, before we talk about the rabbis, you need a synagogue for them. And here you're creating these synagogues and the dress and the decorum. And we spoke about in KJ, in Jewish Center, the high hat. And this I saw with my own eyes, that they would have a procession in KJ, like a military procession when they took the Torah out, and you had to put on a high hat. I saw this with my own eyes. And Jewish Center, they had the high hats, like that girl who was interviewed, the Gottesman girl, said, my father used to complain the hat never fit right, you had to fit yourself into the hat. In other words, it's not like you go to buy a hat and you say, give me large, give me medium, whatever. Here, they had the hats waiting. Fine. I have a student, he's a character par excellence, but you all owe him a thank you. Rabbi Norman Schluss. Do you know why you owe him a thank you, Jack? Do you drink Coca-Cola on Pesach?
Sometimes.
Baruch Hashem, we all drink Coca-Cola. He is the Rav HaMachshir for the OU. You know where he is now? He's in Ireland. Every year he's in Ireland, weeks before Pesach. That's where they make the syrup that goes all over the world, including to Atlanta. So, and he's coming in Aliyah here, just bought an apartment, he has a daughter living here. Wonderful, he was my student in the early 70s. Rebbe, greetings from Ireland. I just want to let you know I thoroughly enjoy your shirim as I listen to them while driving around the southeast. I average about 400, 800 miles a week. This last 2 weeks I've been in Ireland, where it is a 3-hour drive to Dublin from the Coca-Cola factory. Today I listened to your very enlightening shir about the top hats, and I thought you would enjoy a little story regarding them. In 1974, as part of a Simchat Torah Shabbaton run by Yavna. Do you all know what Yavna was? It's ancient history. All right. And Simchat Yavna was an it's gone many decades, but it was an organization of college kids who were from, many of them were my students. I was once the guest of honor at a Yavna convention. All right. On Simchat Torah, we all went to the Jewish Center for davening. During the festivities, I, along with some of my friends, took the top hats from the coat room, stacked them on top of the flagpoles, meaning, you know, the Simchas Torah flags, and paraded around the shul during the hakafas. Can you picture this? This is Jewish Center. Needless to say, we were politely asked to leave the shul and never to come back. So, all right, this is the Jewish Center. But let us move further. It catches that this is the Jewish Center, period. And her analysis, I have to say again, I wish I would have someone who would answer me. Did she go to Ramaz? Because this lady knows what she is talking about. And here the whole problem of children in the synagogue, the prayer book, the Talmud Torah. And we ended off last week, Chaim, I don't like someone who throws away Shas and Poskim and takes the easy way out. You're coming Monday, come Sunday as well. Follow me? Find a Shalom, what we did yesterday, the Shailas and Shuvat in Bamishpacha, that's the heart. This is icing on the cake. But the chocolate cake? Wow, how can you have the icing without the chocolate cake? Anyway, so we ended off with the sisterhood and the brotherhood, the men's club, the ladies' auxiliary, and let me quote Rabbi Lichtstein to you, I'm picking up new material, and this captures it. A congregation without a sisterhood is like a home without a mother. It is the sisterhood that brings in a spirit of hospitality, friendship, sociability, and warmth into a congregation. The men's club, Rabbi Lichtstein said, is the very life and essence of the group. It is the mortar and cement by which the membership is fused into a fellowship, causing them to experience a sense of kinship. And this is Rabbi Luchstein speaking, halacha lemaisa, he hits the nail 100% on the head. And I hear here's the difference between America to Israel, even though I have to admit some American rabbis, some Anglos or some Israelis who were exposed to Anglo temples are trying to make it a little different here. But here's a true story. Again, due to my age, I wind up telling stories that I'm the only one. I hope there are more that still remember this. Go to Rehov Chalap. You all know Yerushalayim, Kiryat Shmuel. It's called Rehavia today, but originally the name of the neighborhood was Kiryat Shmuel. Why is it Kiryat Shmuel? It's named after Reb Shmuel Solant. Why was the neighborhood established? The neighbors established a very simple story. Rehavia was built to get away from the Frum people. Are you aware of that? The professors, Hebrew U, the Germans that came in Aliyah in 1920, 1930, they didn't want to be in Geula, Meir Sharim. They built Rehavia, and their dream was that Frum people would never live in Rehavia. And the truth was, in Rehavia, you had a semi-conservative synagogue long before the American conservative movement came to Israel. And you remember it was on Rehov Keren Chaim et Yisrael, where the Mamish davened. It was upstairs, it was in a second floor, as I recall. I think it was called Emet V'Yamuna, No Mechitza. I don't know if men and women sat together, but No Mechitza. They said these are the conservative Jews. From, was there when I came in Aliyah 50 years ago. That was Rehavia. So there was a Jew called Ettinger. Ettinger is a famous family name. It's from the Talmidei Hagra, those type of Jews. Jew was a milkman. He only knew Shas backwards and forwards by heart, but he made a living with a wagon selling milk every morning. I yet knew him. Moshe, there's the stairs going up from Berlin to Chalab is called Malot Ettinger. So Yitzchak Tzvi Ettinger. So he decided, I'm going to build a neighborhood that's going to be Frum. We're going to show them in Rehavia. And he named it after Shmuel Solant. He built the first house. I can show you where it stood. Now there's a big building there. 1929. The Arabs came and shot at him. He shot back and they never bothered him again. And that's how the neighborhood began. Fine. Over the years, Rehavia and Kiryat Shmuel have merged into one. If anything, I think the percentage of Frum Jews in Rehavia may even be higher than Kiryat Shmuel. Kiryat Shmuel is probably 75% Shom B'Torah Mitzvah. Rehavia today may be 80% because of Shari Chesed is also part of Rehavia, and that's already totally Frum. So the barriers broke down, and everyone calls it Rehavia. Now, on Rehov Rav Chaim Berlin, there are no shuls, but if you walk up the steps, you'll see there's one shul after another on Chalap that then becomes Ari. Now the big shul, the first shul in the neighborhood, which was the cornerstone was laid in 1932, right after the neighborhood began in 1929. They now didn't want to walk further to Gula to Daven. We have enough Jews. It's a very famous picture. Rav Kook came to the laying of the cornerstone. And the shul was dedicated in 1934. It's named Ohel Rivka. None of you will guess why. Dov is looking at me. Ohel Rivka, in memory of Rivka Imenu. It's named in memory of a Gevedet Rivka Rottenberg, who gave, I think it was 50 Israeli pounds, must have been a fortune at the time, 50 English pounds, and the shul is named in her memory, Ohel Rivka. All right? You walk another way down the block, you come to Yad Tamar, it's called, although technically the shul is called. Now, what's the story? The story is very simple. A guy came in Aliyah from Forest Hills. This is the early 50s. The story of the family, Teitelbaum, has to be mid-50s, came in Aliyah. They were survivors. Unfortunately, she could not conceive whatever Hitler did to her, lo aleinu. They had no children. He made a little money in America. If you know about Forest Hills, there were quite a few survivors there in the import-export business. And they made a little money, came in Aliyah, and he's davening in Ohel Rivka, which was the only shul in the neighborhood at the time. His name, the last name was Teitelbaum. First name, look at the plaque, I'll tell you where to look in a minute. I don't recall it offhand, maybe Yosef, but Teitelbaum. Tamar, Teitelbaum, fig tree, Teitelbaum. Tamar, Yad Tamar. So he's davening on Rivka 2 years, and he's walking in downtown Jerusalem on Rehov Yafo, and he meets a Jew, and he says, Shalom Aleichem! And the Jew looks at him, Favu kenstu me, where do you know me from? And Teitelbaum says to the Jew, what do you mean, where do I know you from? Favu kenich eich, ich darf mit euch schon 2 Jahre, ich sitze da eben on in Old Rivka. And Old Rivka, the shul, you came into Davin, no one asked you any questions, you walked out, no one asked for your name. So this guy was so upset. At that time there was a shul further over near Geula that was looking for a new home, Oel Yosef. So they made a shidduch. He gave them $50,000, terrific sum at that time, late 50s, but on one condition, the new shul will only daven Nusach Sfad. And his idea was, if it doesn't Nusach Sfad, it'll attract Hasidish Yidden, and they will reign the ene mit the other, they'll trinken alachayim, machen afabrengen, it'll be a different atmosphere. That's exactly what, and by the way, he did it, the shul is named in his memory, and Jack, you go into to the shul, to, I'm saying all the others, I should say Yad Tamar, not to confuse you, you'll see a plaque on the wall in memory of him and his wife. What's missing, and it's lit up all the time, there are two Yahrzeit candles of lights burning there. What's missing, until they renovated 2 years ago, on the other side was the bylaws of the shul. And there you'll see, it used to be, Achedim Chamur im Hashlich Tzibur lo yitpaleel Nusach Sfarad. I think they tolerated Nusach Ari, but Nusach Ashkenaz, they bound your lips, tied you up, called the police, and threw you into the Russian compound. Got it, Vic? Now, here, this is what Rabbi Luchstein is saying. What binds, what makes a shul a shul? What is the beauty of an American shul? How did I build Maplewood, South Orange? Believe me, 50, 60 years later, people are not going to remember the davening. But they'll remember affairs, the sisterhood ran, we called it the men's club. We didn't yet have that term brotherhood. But these are the affairs where you become a chevra, you become a social group. Now, there's another factor to this as well. What's the purpose of a shul in America? See, in Israel, the shul does not have to suit this purpose, fill this purpose. In Israel, Tanayin Hara, I still have a problem in Ohel Rivka. Generally speaking now, because my grandchildren are all out of the neighborhood, so I walk close to my house. I daven Mincha in Ohel Rivka, and then I catch Marv in Yad Tamar. Why do I daven in two different places? Because Ohel Rivka's Mincha is the latest Mincha in the neighborhood, and Yad Tamar is the first Marv in the neighborhood. And there's another part to it. I'm not being a wise guy. It's not good to leave your wife home alone, a woman alone in the house. The Gemara says it. It's, the kids are all out. So this way I'm home. You understand, it's better. It's all gefinnen in shtub, and not gas. I'm sorry, why am I speaking so much Yiddish today? Chaim, if you don't know Yiddish, you don't know Torah. Plain and simple. The Torah I was taught in Lakewood, I repeat it again. Torah was given in Yiddish. And I believe them until today. You understand me? I have a problem with the Moroccans, and I'm getting my grandson's marrying a Persian, half-Persian girl. I have a problem. We'll solve it one day. Right now, I'm not going to worry about it. Morty, how many Sfadim do you have in your family already? Let's see. What are you, pure Ashkenaz? They'll arrest you. Don't tell anyone. Charlie, how many Baruch Hashem?
Avraham Hashem used to boast all this mishpacha, the in-laws were all with bucks.
Who boasted like that?
My father, Hashem.
Yeah, but that was in America. Yeah. Here, my problem is I'm going to speak under the chuppah. I know what I'm going to say. the kids will not understand me. What's a hacking your head? Can you move a kibble and this and that? And I have a good word to say. But the kids, they're Israelis. They don't know Tunisian, Libyan. I have replenish them, Moroccan, Polish.
Yitzhak Adon Ilaway's chained down.
Baruch Hashem.
That's
who was getting married tonight. I hear. My grandfather would have a fit. Beauty. All right, anyway, but coming back here, so between Mincha Mariv and Ol Rivka, the rabbi teaches Mishnah Brura. I don't know. I don't understand. Every Israeli that I know reads Hebrew fluently. They read the newspaper. They're listening to the radio. They see all the shtiyot on television. The rabbi has to teach them Mishnah Brura? Ich verstehe das nicht. But all right, I'm telling you, I come to Yatama, he's learning with them kids of Shulchan Aruch. All right, if I give a shir, maybe I'll elaborate, I'll give Kiddushim. But stomach, I don't understand it. But in America, if you don't teach them, what's the purpose of the shul? Not just to daven. So here, Rabbi Lukstein and Rabbi Young, and she brings all the examples. The men's club and the sisterhood became vehicles for Torah study. See, this is important, that it's not just they ran social affairs, but the social affairs were anchored around some Torah concept. Here we have a visiting rabbi from the state of Israel who will speak about the development of the yeshivat in Israel. All right, you want to talk? Litva, Chassidish, where they come from, Talmud Torah. Again, it opens the world. The whole Zionist movement, how did it develop among religious Jews? Many times, the sisterhood, the brotherhood, the affairs were based around Zionism. And there are more examples. You run Sunday morning, you get everyone to come daven, because afterwards, there is a father-son basketball game, baseball game. Then there's a breakfast after the game. They play five innings, and then they have a beautiful breakfast. So you see, the brotherhood, the sisterhood, taka, synthesize the social aspects of the shul. And this turns it into a hotbed of emotion, of feeling, of loyalty. There's no one in Israel is going to walk around and say, I do say, I've been davening on this seat in Ohel Rivka for 50 years. Big deal. Now, what are your memories? 50 years of davening. 50 years of davening? Shachris, Mincha, Maariv, Musaf, whatever you want. There's nothing beyond that. You follow what I'm saying? It's not like I'm davening in Israel, Woodmere, 50 years. Oh, this is my friend, my business, my deal. I always tell the story in Israel, Woodmere. I tell you the story with the Torah reading. I was very close. Those of you who know what Woodmere was, there were the Gluck brothers, a family saved by Wallenberg from Hitler, Raoul Walder, a family, four brothers. The older three were born in Hungary. Remember I told you the story, the fourth brother wound up in Ramaz. The other brothers, they were poor, RJJ, then MTA, and then Raman, who wears the black hat? The brother who went to Ramaz. Anyway, they were saved by Raoul Wallenberg. It's mamish, living history. They were in a safe house in Budapest. I mean, the story is unbelievable when you hear it, and I've heard it from them so many times. And I became very close to the family. I taught each family, I taught children, and somehow we bonded together. So they're not in Woodmere anymore, but they were. So a lot of times I would spend the Shabbat in Woodmere. And here I am davening next to one of these brothers, and he was in finance, and import, export, you know, and investment. And my word of honor, before davening, before Kriyas HaTorah, a guy pops over to him. Jack, I got a deal. I want to talk with you. The hotel, we're going in. $25,000 a piece. You going in with us? And Jack says to him, I'll let you know after Kriyas HaTorah. Let me think about it. Now you can imagine what type of Kriyas HaTorah, what type of Haftarah. And sure enough, right after the Haftarah, Jack gives him, yeah, count me in, count me in. And Enoch Inami, he became a partner, and I benefited down the line from this investment because I was able to stay there. But you saw at the shul, it's not just davening and learning and Torah. Investment, money. Letov aletov. You have tragic stories now in modern times. No, you tell me. The guy from Lakewood sitting in jail who'll probably rot away there for life. I had a friend. I have a friend. I don't want to mention his name, but maybe you'll recognize the story. I'm not letting any secret out. It was in every newspaper and TV and whatnot. And they were good friends in the shul. Knew a guy comes over to you in the shul. I got this deal, I got that deal. A guy who davens, a guy who learned in Lakewood, a guy in the Kallis Zibrim Cup. My friend lost, according to the newspapers, 93, if I remember correctly, $1 million. If I'm off by a million or so, Charlie, it doesn't really matter that much. But you see, that's the shul. You trust him, and then you interviewed him. I think it was in the New York Times. Interviewed him. Why did you trust him? He says, I've been praying with the guy for many years. The guy is one of us. That's the shul. It can work to your advantage. I hope it does most of the time. But lo aleinu, as Rakefet has learned, not everyone is a good Jew. You can be shown Meshabbos and Kashrut and everything. At the same time, all you're interested in is yourself, money, thievery. Oh, God have mercy, what Jews are capable of leaving out what's going on in Israel today with Malki Leifer. I know that case inside out. I was in Australia 19 years ago. 18. I mean, it's just unbelievable, Melbourne, what they have suffered, both from males and females. She's not the only one, but the others were caught down there and put into jail. She ran away and got here, and I've taught members of her family. Leifer, you should recognize the name. It's a Rabbanisha family from Hungary, Pittsburgh, etc. The rabbi, the Pittsburgh Rebbe, where's he? In Ashdod, Ashdod, I believe. I remember once flying with him. It's very, very sad. And look what it's doing to Leitzman, and they go to Yisrael, and they get a Rebbe, and his relationship with his chassid. It's mind-boggling. But there is something to be said that is lacking in Israel. We go to a shul to daven. Very rarely is it a place where we bond together, a social club, help each other, care about each other. Maybe I shouldn't be critical. We live in the state of Israel. The government takes care of us. We're all Jewish. We speak Hebrew. We curse in Hebrew, laugh in Hebrew, cry in Hebrew. We serve in the army together. So could perhaps the shul should only be a place to daven. But there's a lot to be said for a kehila, for a community. I know that now is it Rananim, am I pronouncing it right? The shul in Talpiot, is it Baka, in that neighborhood, they have an Israeli rabbi who was rabbi in Memphis, and he knows English, and they say it's fabulous. My grandson goes to Shai Finkelstein. And I have a Talmud and his wife, and these are brilliant people. My Talmud and his wife is a medical doctor, a brilliant lady. They love the rabbi. And there's a feeling, my grandson goes there, says, if you come late, you can't get in, the place is mobbed. And he speaks in Hebrew, but after davening, he gives a summary in English. And I thought, could be it's needed here. But be it as it may, this was a development with the Jewish Center, with KJ, with institutional, the synagogues, the brotherhood, the sisterhood, the Talmud Torah, the high hats, on formal events in the davening, the children congregation. And then we come back to where we began in the Jewish Center. And here we come to the heart of a problem that haunted our people in the 20s into the 30s. I don't know how much of a problem it is today. But you see, the Jewish Center, this concept, and as Rabbi Rubin said, by the way, Rabbi Rubin had some surgery on his teeth yesterday. He's very tired today, antibiotics, so I wish him a refuah shleima. I spoke with him before class. But Rabbi Rubin made the point, is a center really good for the Jews? And here we come to a real problem. If you're building a Jewish center, what does a Jewish center mean? And we got to give Mordechai Kaplan credit on this level. He was one of the first to envision this idea, if not the first to put it into practice. You build a Jewish center, the Jewish center, as it's called, on the Upper West Side. I think it's 10 stories. She has, I think it's 10 stories tall. Anyone can correct me. I thought 8, 9. I think she says 10. So look what you have in the Jewish center, a shul. But a shul is only 1/10 of the Jewish center. Classrooms, movie rooms, social halls, kitchens, swimming pool, a basketball court you can have. It's no end to what you can develop. Well, is it a synagogue or is it a center? And this became a point of contention. Baal Batim can come in, be very active, put their money in, but all they're interested in is the center. The synagogue is a very minor concern. And here it's fascinating to see the sources she quotes. Here, this is Rabbi Lichtenstein speaking, denouncing those who would prefer, quote, a Palestinian folk song to the prophets. And you know what he's referring to? Imagine you announce in the center, I'm going to give a lecture on the prophets. So, 10 people come. You announce in the center, we're going to have Palestinian folk dancing. 100 people show up. Now, just think for a minute. She quotes Israel Goldstein. Anyone recognize the name? We were in walking distance. The Israel Goldstein Center, Educational Center. It's not far from here. Those of you who know Yerushalayim, it's off Shai Agnon, San Simon. They're now going to build it. It was in the news. Who's it named after? He was a very prominent conservative rabbi, right-wing conservative. I know I met him when I came in Aliyah. He was a Shomer Shabbos. That much I can testify. I believe he davened in Yeshurun, actually. He was a Shomer Shabbos. But the right was a conservative rabbi. Big Zionist, raised a fortune of money for Israel, and they built the Israel Goldstein. It has campus, a room for classrooms, dormitories, tremendous piece of land, which now they're building on. The government took over part of it. So here she quotes Israel Goldstein, whereas the hope of the synagogue center was to synagogize the family. The effect has been the secularization of the synagogue. That's a very powerful, insightful quote. And look at it. You take the average family in the 1920s, 30s, belonging to Jewish center. How much time did you spend davening? And how much time did you spend in the pool and other events that had very little to do with davening, ritual, Yiddishkeit, learning, Torah? And here, once again, quoting Rabbi Lichtenstein, he says, a well-planned and efficiently directed study group in the congregation will do infinitely more good than all the prattling about Jewish culture, all the horrors, and all the mockery of the imitation Oneg Shabbat. And you can understand that. Let's reaffirm the imitation of the Oneg Shabbat. Chaim, this is something that we suffered within the rabbinate. Friday night, people are working. They don't get home till 6, 7 o'clock. Kabbalah Shabbat, even now with the clock changing and the day is getting later, even now, who can come to davening at 5 o'clock? They're not home yet. So that was the invention. The conservatives, the reform, had the late Friday night service. The Orthodox rabbinate fought the late Friday night service tooth and nail. To a certain degree, even 80, 70 years ago, they succeeded. But people who didn't come to shul still wanted something to know it was Shabbat. So they introduced the concept of an Oneg Shabbat. The Oneg Shabbat was half, said some Tehillim, sang Lechadot, do you follow? It was half some sort of ritual, but the heart of it was the food, the Oneg Shabbat, the camaraderie, the socialization. And here too, this is Rabbi Lookstein, very pointed, that learning, study group, more important than anything else. Did the Balabatim listen? With half an ear. Then he goes on, Jewish Center, this is very cute. What do you do, Jewish Center? Sunday morning, you'll have a father and son basketball game, a big crowd, the breakfast. What do you do, Sudashli Shit? Who's interested? Who's coming? Shalashudis, all right, the devoted nucleus. So Rabbi Young introduced the idea, it was not a shalashudis. It was called tea table, and the rabbi would utilize the custom of using the leisure time at the tea table in discussing Jewish law. And you can understand what we're talking about. Tea table, English, high society, everyone has tea and crumpets, biscuits, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So instead of calling it the Sudashli Shit, this was the tea table. Now, the rabbi would speak and discuss Jewish law. So you had here, Chatzi Evet, Chatzi Ben Chorin. And you follow, this is Rabbi Young. This is the innovativeness and Rabbi Lookstein. And here I come back to Rabbi Lookstein. You see, he was a master of the word. And I don't think he ever said something which was untrue. But he could say it in a way that not always did it correspond to the Talmud reality. So I'll give you an example, a beautiful example that I know from here. When I came in Aliyah, some of the Elder Rabbanim, I was very fortunate. I came in 69 and I saw right away I'll never make a living here, I have to admit. It was very, very difficult financially. And well into the 80s, I give all the credit to the Likud government. They straightened out the communist system here. But I decided in 69, I said, look, I'm in Israel, let me take advantage. And because I had that doctorate in Jewish history and my mind was open, I love Jewish, there are reasons why. I'll talk about it when I start talking about Be'ezrat Hashem, the European yeshiva. But I always loved Torah history. So I said, I interviewed anyone and everyone I could get my hands on. All the old Yekis who survived, Torim Derech Eretz, they all lived in Rechavia. Are you aware of that? Everyone lived, the whole Hildesheimer. Mm-hmm. I went to one by one. I became friendly with the person who walked the streets of Berlin with the Rav. You understand? You can't do better than that. I quote him in my work on the Rav. So people would ask me, who is this Rav Yosef Lookstein? Mihu? Mahu? So I said, Lamakasho, why are you asking? Why? When he comes here, he tells us, I have the firmest shul in the United States. My balcony is 2 flights up. And you can't deny that. KJ, have you ever been there? The balcony is taka 2 flights up. And people would hear Lookstein speak like that, they'd be overwhelmed. Wow. And compared to Rabbi Youngshul, compared to institutional Rabbi Goldstein, he taka had a balcony 2 flights up. He never mentioned that most of his balabatim ate fish in an unkosher restaurant, etc., etc. All that goes with the KJ crowd at that time. But here is Rabbi Lookstein carrying on against the Jewish Center. He says, the rabbi explains somewhat hotly The congregation never aspired to being a synagogue center. Quote, our building does not echo with the bouncing balls, the crackle of billiards, and the thud of bowling. To some, perhaps, the absence of clubrooms, gymnasiums, and swimming pools, quote, represented a serious deficiency, Lookstein observed. But as far as seeing a synagogue were concerned, we are triumphantly and gloriously a house of God, a place of religious communion. And those of you who yet knew Rabbi Joe Lookstein, those words are perfect. That is Rabbi Lookstein. A little guy, but what a command of language. Peh mapik magoliot. And that's the story I told you with Aaron Kahn. Rabbi Kahn became a Rosh Hashiva. He said, why are you graduate? I was informed. I thought he was part of that crowd that gathered around the Rav later in life when the Rav was the last of the Mohegans, the last of the giants in America. There were a lot of people came from other yeshiva that already had smicha from Reb Moshe or elsewhere, and they gathered around. But Rabbi Kahn evidently is a YU product, and he becomes a Rosh Yeshiva. Remember the story I told you? And it's classic. This is classic. This is Lookstein. This is little Joe. And he gives this lecture, announced that face as much interest as the Griscolo has today in what I'm teaching. He gives this lecture, and it's announced the Brisker Derech analysis, and face 4 or 5 people show up. So he meets Rabbi Lookstein, and this is in KJ, and he was a hot name at YU, a new name, like they just appointed Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz, if I have the name correct. Everyone's talking about it. It's a hot new appointment. And Rabbi Lookstein says, I heard you only had a few people. He says, yeah, I was very disappointed. Well, it's your fault. And he looks at Rabbi Lookstein, why is it my fault? What title did you give the lecture? And he gives me, Rabbi said, that's not the way to title it to attract people. And Rabbi Kahn described, Rabbi Lookstein with his hands, he's writing it in the air. There is more to brisk than tea. Lipton's tea, the brisk tea. There is more to brisk than tea. And this is quintessential Rabbi Lookstein. All right, now 1 second. One step further, something else that comes about in the modern Orthodox synagogue, which today, due to the change in the world and computerization, probably doesn't exist. The synagogue bulletin. No one ever heard of it. It doesn't exist. It's all online today. You download it, right? It exists. It's a different way of doing business today. You download it. It's unbelievable, the world. I see everyone walking around, with that, holding it in their hand, and even to walk someplace, they're being guided, they're looking which street to cross. Kanayin Hara, it's a new world, but I have to admit, for people my age, I walked in, my branch of the bank closed down, Rehov Agnon. It had been in Shenechovsky, Discount Bank. We're now part of the Rehavia Bank and Karen Hayesod. And I get a letter from the bank that they're no longer going to be any of the usual services in the bank. You have to do it all on your own, and there'll be a lady to help you if you need help. I walk into the bank on Friday. I wanted to see. I had to take out money. I need to help my family coming. They'll need shekel, not dollars. So I had to take out, you have to go to the machine, fine, there are 3 machines there, I was very happy, good, fine. And I see, and I don't see any kaspariot, to use a name I learned in Hebrew, bank tellers. And I see a gentleman walk in, about my age, but looked older, walking with a cane. And he doesn't know what to do. And they come over and they say to him, we know ein kva kaspariot, koma sheta hayitu mekabel, ata tzirich lasot batzmecha. And he looks at it, and the lady says, I'll show you how to take money out of the machine. I'll show you how to deposit checks, but you have to know your code number. The guy didn't know his code number. He had to leave the bank to go home. Maybe he had it someplace, his code number. Ribbono shel Olam. A synagogue bulletin you take out of a machine, that's the way it works today. But just think for a minute what an innovation this was. Tell me, Vic, when you davened in Meshbitz, in our cleanest shtibul, did you have a bulletin that times of davening, the message of the rabbi, the sisterhood president, the brotherhood president, this too, what an innovation, the KG bulletin, the institutional review that Rabbi Goldstein kept congregants abreast of forthcoming events, informing them of deaths, births, marriages, bar mitzvahs within the congregation, and serving as a kind of printed pulpit for the rabbi, who would resort to the rabbi's page or the rabbi's column to editorialize on current affairs. It's something you take for granted. How did this develop? And I have to say that you go to these big shuls in America, and during the summer at times I have to speak, I wind up in a big shul, I can never understand what goes on. They start davening 8:30, a quarter to nine, they finish 12, and at the end of davening the president gets up and he starts making announcements. And this mazel tov, kiddush, the people yelling at it, mazel tov, blah, blah. Idiot! You have the bulletin, it's all written there, what? But the people love it. See, it's part of the social aspect. And two summers ago, I had the shock of my life. I'm in a big Orthodox shul in Riverdale, not the innovative one, but the center of the road one. And the davening is now coming to an end, and the president is on vacation, and the president of the sisterhood gets up in the shul, everyone is still sitting there with the taliyot on, and she's making all the announcements. I had to take a deep breath, what can I tell you? I'm not in favor of that type of behavior. I don't believe a woman should be speaking at any part of the service. I was zeichet to paskin what I paskined, and to find that Rabbi Lichtenstein Baruch Shekivanti Ledat Gedolim paskined exactly like I did on a similar question. But the world moves on and laughs at Rakefet, and what can we say? I have to make my peace with it, I would imagine. Baruch Hashem in Israel, we don't have those problems. But that's the shul, that's the sisterhood, and that's the bulletin, and that's a new type of synagogue that our grandparents never dreamt about back in Meshbitz, back in Vilna. But this is America, the 20s, the 30s, the 40s. And you see what happened during this period, and again I have to say that Jenna Weissman, I absolutely feel she's from within. Jocelyn is her married name, because she understands this very well. When we were growing up, this generation, the shul was the dominant factor on the American scene. And this takes us back to the Rav, and I'll quote it in context later on. It happens to be a comment he made to the uncle of a young lady who's sitting right in front of us. And the Rav said to your Uncle Beryl, he said, when you were growing up, he said to Beryl, who were your role models? And he didn't wait for an answer. The Rav said, the big three, rabbis, Lichtenstein, Goldstein, Young. Today, who are your son's role models? Your first cousin, the great Gaon, you have Michael Rosenzweig, the Rosh Yeshiva. See, it totally shifted gears. The Rosh Yeshiva, the Yeshivat, they're the hotbed of Torah in America today. This is why America is so successful. England never turned out yeshivat like the United States. In England, it's still United Synagogue, Federation of Synagogues. It's a different atmosphere there. Not in America. In America, take a look what happened in Woodmere. The Mashpia, the Mikdash Miyat, what is it called? What's the name of the shul? Eish Kodesh. Eish Kodesh, right. Eish Kodesh. The Shetzner Rebbe, the Eish Kodesh. Take a look what happened. It's a different world altogether. But not in the 20s, 30s, 40s, even into the 50s. Took a while. By the time Reb Aaron died, Reb Aaron Kotler, 1962, that funeral represented the golden standard. It had shifted. You follow? It had shifted. But the Rav, very insightfully, says to Beryl, who were your heroes? And this was the shul, these were the rabbis, these were the pace setters. And as Rabbi Lichtenstein said, I quote him again, traditional Judaism successfully adapted itself to America and became, quote, American traditional Judaism. And they were proud what they had achieved. It was a new world. They could answer. They could survive. They could attract. It wasn't the Judaism of the Lower East Side. It wasn't the Judaism of the Spittoon. It wasn't the Judaism of the Shtibble. But it was an elegant, Americanized, westernized orthodoxy. And this is an ongoing process. I said this in relation to what's going on in the state of Israel today. So the whole question of the yeshiva boys, the army, the technological schools, the hesder of what we spoke about yesterday, the Haredi hesder, we organized by a brother of three students of mine. Three of his siblings are my students. He's a brother, and I'm proud to say when he first organized it, I gave him a haskamah, a letter, it helped him raise funds. I am very proud. Today, he doesn't need letters, the government of Israel, it's a chai hanoseyat atzmo. It's a chesda program for so-called charedim. So in America, where they got involved, what in Lakewood, they're involved in the conflict in Baltimore, well, no one's asking them. Unfortunately, if Rakefet was running the country, I would issue a psak halacha that no Jewish male 18 years old has a right not to report to the Israeli army. It's pikuach nefesh, it's melchemet mitzvah. Whoever heard that you're living in Baltimore, you're exempt, you're living in Denver, you're exempt from the army? I don't know where that comes from. And if you don't believe me, read Reb Aaron Lichtenstein's article in Tradition, the early 1980s. So Rabbi Feldman of Baltimore, who, you know, grew, spent his formative many years in B'nai Brak, but wow, the hashkafas he took, he's now the Rosh Yeshiva in Israel, so he starts screaming and yelling, they want to turn the yeshiva boys into Israelis. And I add one word, they want to turn them into Israelis who are Haredim. You see? There's a difference. Yes, everyone wants you to be an Israeli. Today, Baruch Hashem, the success, I quote generals in the IDF, the success of the Haredim coming into the army will be judged if they remain Haredim when they leave the army. And that's exactly what's happening today. It's a new generation. They're at home in Israel and they want to be part of Israel. And they retain their Harediness. This is an ongoing challenge. How did I put it many times, quoting modern Hebrew literature? Ota geveret bishinui aderet. No one ever said it better. Then the Rav said that. I quote Rebbe, we have to take that old lady of Yiddishkeit, of Judaism, and dress her in modern clothes. And this is exactly what happened the 40s, the 50s, the 60s. A new type of Orthodox shul. Americanized, that's what Rabbi Lichtenstein boasted. I would call it westernized. The Rav was a big fan of Rabbi Lichtenstein. One of the famous speeches the Rav gave in 78 when KJ celebrated 75 years of the new building, right? The Rav spoke about how much he admires Rabbi Lichtenstein. He was a pioneer. He built Ramaz. He taught, and the Rav himself, what did he do in Boston? Maimonides, what was his outlook? It was the ultimate representation of everything Rabbi Lichtenstein, Young, and Goldstein dreamt about, except on a much higher level. Godlit b'Torah, Godlit b'Yirat Shemayim, in the context of the Western world. There's no better way to describe the Rav. The ultimate. All right. So this was the achievement. Dov, you with me? Did you know the Rav in your time? Or did this come across?
Yeah.
Because his son, my classmate Chaim, Rav Chaim, who's a great Gaon, you should know. No one raised a Talmud Chacham in America on the level of Chaim. You have no idea of his knowledge. Overwhelming. All right? Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, I can't say who's bigger, but Rav Chaim is very special. All right? He was mad at his father in the 70s. He said to his father, he was complaining, the swing to the right, and he says to his father, it's your fault. Why don't you teach a course in philosophy like you did in the 50s in Bernard Revel? And the Rav said, you understand this, you're later in life, you don't have that energy. If I would tell you how much I taught 20, 30 years ago, you wouldn't believe your ears. I was like a machine. But I have to say, today my classes are on a higher level because I'm totally concentrated on just two fields, and I, Baruch Hashem, I'm producing. I have no idea what's on my mind yet to do, but God should spare me and help me. No, Yomo, we now have the beautiful synagogues. We now need the rabbis. And here we come to the big three. I just want to tell you, what was the Rav's relationship with your uncle? And here I'll explain something to you. Everything I just said a few minutes ago, that's the Rav. That's the way he functioned. That's the way he thought. Could you imagine he was an admirer of Rabbi Joe Lichtenstein? Okay? My wife went to Ramah. She has criticisms. Rabbi Lichtenstein used to say, a kippah is an indoor object. You don't wear it outside. And Ramah, as many of the kids, the women were more frum than the boys, that's for sure. Because if you really were from a frum home, you sent the kid to a more yeshivish place, and a girl, she can go to Ramah's, she doesn't have to know a shagasaye like a boy should. So, she had criticisms. Many of the kids, they took off the kippah when they walked out. He was kippah, and he wanted them to wear hats. But if they're not wearing a kippah, they're wearing, and those years, today everything is different. So you can have criticism. But it was tremendous achievement. So I'll tell you. I'm giving this shayua. People are listening across the world. Yesterday there was a couple here from Lakewood. And he claims, he told me all the jokes I told for the last 10 years, so he's a serious Talmud. But, in Lakewood, can someone really understand what I'm saying? Someone in Gare is listening every time, in Gare Square. Right, a few can comprehend, others are just listening, it doesn't speak to them. What was unique about Queens is a rabbinate developed there. It was called the Queens Mafia. The Rav knew this term too. I don't have time now, but he knew the term, believe me. Why was it called the Queens Mafia? Lashon Sagi Nahar. Right, like we call in Shas, a blind person has a lot of light. Okay? All over in the rabbinate, there were endless machlokes. Reb Shaul Liebman said, God has a sense of humor. Talmidei Chachamim Marbim Shalom B'Olam. No? Show me two rabbis who don't have three different opinions. And this goes on. It's all over the world. Fortunately, unfortunately, you don't have to go any further than Israel. What goes on here, one little election, look how many different religious parties we have with rabbis yelling and shouting for each party. All right. Unfortunately, that's the reality. What was beautiful about Queens is the rabbis got along fabulously. No fighting, no jealousy. Ish et re'eyu chazek. All the names you want to mention. Your uncle, Rabbi Schoenfeld, Rabbi Holzer, one after another. Rabbi Marcus, Rabbi Albert, Rabbi Shapiro, one after another. More than that, these rabbis basically all had the same hashkafa. Some were bigger lamdim, some less lamdim, some were more Hasidish, less Hasidish. 90% of their thinking was identical. The Rav felt totally comfortable with them. That was the secret of his relationship. Met a rabbi from Brooklyn. I don't have to tell you, Brooklyn has Flatbush and Borough Park and East Flatbush and Midwood and Crown Heights. He didn't feel that comfortable. Met a rabbi from Manhattan. That's the Lower East Side, the Upper East Side, the West Side. Didn't feel that comfortable. Queens was his element. They understood him and he understood them. That's the secret. You want a proof that Rakefet is right? Bring you the simplest proof of all. The holes are home. It should be turned into a shrine. They had in Kew Gardens Hills, one of the first families there, a wonderful family, the means to entertain, turned their garage into a big living room, dining area, so they hosted endless Sheva Brachas there. And inevitably, the main speaker was the Rav. And he would let his hair down there. What he said in the Holzer house, he would never say publicly. There he was at home. And there you have some of his most important talks, and I turned into a little bit of a hero because of it. Why? In my work on the Rav, I called one of those talks where he criticizes the swing to the right and the mentality that everyone has to be the same, look the same, think the same, act the same, and how this is not congruous, it's not helpful to create Gedolei Yisrael, original thinking, to create a Reb Chaim. He said it in the halls of the house. People, the Rav said this, but Rakefet made it up. I said, listen to the tape. And I did a terrible thing, wasn't allowed. I made the tape available through my methods. One day in about 50 years, I'll tell you the whole story. Made that tape available. Oh, people, oh, they apologized to me. Oh, you're right. You understand what I'm saying? And time and again, he let his hair down. He was at home. That's why he could talk to Beryl. Who are your heroes? He didn't wait for an answer. But that was the relationship. My dear friends, we have arrived, the big three. Morty, you're going to say to me in a few weeks' time, a few months' time, how come you call them the big three? You spent so much time in Rabbi Young and less time in Rabbis Goldstein and Lichtenstein. Correct. We have a tremendous amount of material on Rabbi Young. We do not have that type of material on Rabbis Goldstein and Lichtenstein. And Murray, there are reasons why. Rabbi Young, he was on a different level. You see, Rabbi Goldstein, Lichtenstein, they were American trained. Rabbi Lichtenstein came to America as a youngster. Rabbi Goldstein may have even been born in America. It can be checked out. As you know, Rabbi Drachman was the first American-born rabbi, but that was years before. Rabbi Goldstein already, there were probably plenty of rabbis who were American-born. And they grew up in America. They were fabulous rabbis. They were not the scholars that Rabbi Young was. Rabbi Young represented a conglomeration or a synthesis of many different worlds. As we'll see, Hungary, Germany, England, finally comes to America, PhD, tremendous Talmud Chacham as far as Shas, not a Litvische Talmud Chacham, underline that, but a first-rate Talmud Chacham translated to Masechtot for Sansino, New Yoma, Yumak and Arkin. You take a look. It's Leo Young, first-rate Talmud Chacham. PhD, brilliant. Endless publications. Either he wrote it or edited. We grew up on it. When we were kids, I don't think in your time already it was pushed aside. The Jewish Library. Wow, what that man published. But there's more to it. You gotta have mazel. 2 weeks from today, at 10 o'clock, the regular class will end, and 13 young ladies will walk in from Odessa, having arrived the day before to Israel. We should be matzliach like we've been in the past. Some of them will go on to become total Jews. These are girls who were born in a post-communist world, knowing nothing about Yiddishkeit, college graduates today. How did Rakefet do it? All right. I was able to lend my name to raise money. It's in memory of Bob Matterman, if you know, from West Hempstead. His wife loved the idea and honored me by taking it on, and we raised the funds. Could you imagine what it means when you talk about Jewish Center? This is where the equivalent of tens of millions of dollars by today's standards came to Yeshiva University over the years. Rabbi Young not only had wealthy balabatim, but, well, we'll see. It's not so simple. You see what Mordechai Kaplan had to say about, remember I told you we cannot publish Mordechai Kaplan's memoirs. You'll see next time why I'm, how correct I am. Rabbi Mordechai Kaplan at the Jewish Center, the wealth of the balabatim. But the wealth here was used very constructively. And if there's any shul that built Yeshiva University, it is the Jewish Center. Talking about Mendel Gottesman, Nathan Lamport, and go one by one. Harry Fisher was the exception. He lived on the Upper East Side, but his son-in-law was Rabbi Goldstein. So obviously when he was on the West Side, he davened by Rabbi Goldstein. But the money, where did Yeshiva College begin? Chaim, you went to Yeshiva College? All right. When did it begin? 91 years ago, this September. Do you know where it began? Jewish Center, Manhattan. The campus was not yet ready, uptown. You put a plaque on the building, have a feeling of history. Walk past the Jewish Center, give it a kiss, and say, because of you, I got my bachelor's degree 90 years later or so, approximately. The money. Not only that, the rabbis, the presidents, Yomo, did you know Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb? Where was he before he was called to the august position of president of Yeshiva University? The Jewish Center? Absolutely. Morty, who's president of Yeshiva University today? I work for my students. Stephanie Strauss upstairs, my student. She's my boss here. Her boss, Rabbi Dr. Ari Berman. Rabbi, Jewish Center. Tell me, who is a very important teacher figure? I would say spiritual inspiration at Yeshiva University, Rabbi Dr. J.J. Schachter. Tell me, Vic, where was he rabbi? Jewish Center. It's amazing, amazing how much the Jewish Center was involved with YU. Not only that, and this will come to, and you'll understand it very well when I present the facts. Rabbi Dr. Leo Young was a very serious candidate for the presidency of YU. Go back in time, Mark, 1941, Rabbi Revel dies. Two candidates emerge. Two. No one realizes this today. I'll show you mistakes, but two candidates emerge. The Rav and Rabbi Dr. Leo Young. And I have to tell you, both of them wanted it bitterly. Tova once told me, Rabbi, let me not give a smicha, I'll be in trouble. Dr. Tova Soloveitchik Lichtenstein, there's nothing my father wanted more. See, it's amazing in life. Sometimes you have to bench goymel that you didn't get what you wanted. I'm quoting the Rav. The Rav gave a talk on the efficacy of prayer. Now, do you remember the talk or not? The Rav said, had God answered my prayers, I wouldn't be alive today, my wife wouldn't be alive, and my children wouldn't be alive. You know what he was talking about. He didn't say what, but I'm 99%. I told Rabbi Heschel Shechter, he quotes this too. I said, I can tell you where. He wanted to be in the rabbinate in Vilna. His uncle had died. He had every right to inherit his uncle's position, but there was opposition to him because of the doctor. I imagine, I'm theorizing, but I imagine Rav Chaim Moshe, with all his love for the Soloveitchik family, was opposed to the Rav. Because he went to Berlin, was getting a doctorate, who knows what's in his mind. And imagine had he been elected the Dayan and Mora Hara of Vilna to fill the shoes of Rav Menachem Karakovsky, the Avodat HaMelech. Could you imagine? He's right. He wouldn't be alive, his wife, his children. Thank God. And imagine had he been elected president of YU, I wouldn't be sitting here. I'd be an Amor, it's a boor. I hope I'd be a Yerei Chay, but I wouldn't be much more than that. And Rabbi, the Rav had supporters, no question. Among them, the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe, who ultimately swings the tide and gets him the appointment to succeed his father's Rosh Yeshiva, at least. Rabbi Dr. Young had heavy money behind him, Balabatim. And this too creates tremendous interest. Who was Rabbi Young? What was the machloket? And this was a real machloket. It's not a simple machloket that goes away. There was a tremendous difference between the Rav's gestalt and Rabbi Young's gestalt. And then let me say something else. And we'll come back to everything I'm mentioning. I'll fill in. I'm just painting a general portrait, but I'll fill it in with sugar and salt and all that's good and spicy. There's another point, and I think this point has to be taken very seriously. I was in the rabbinate. All right, there are rabbis and rabbis. Most rabbis, if rabbis are successful, you use the term, I love my rabbi. I'm inspired by my rabbi. I appreciate my rabbi. Very rarely will you use the term, I revere my rabbi. I never yet heard anyone say, I revere Rabbi Lookstein or I revere Rabbi Goldstein. People absolutely revered Rabbi Dr. Leo Young. It's an amazing, amazing, it comes across endlessly, time after time, in responsa literature. I'm thinking of my Sunday class. I looked at Chaim, and it comes across time after time in memorabilia, in the autobiographical literature, of the memoir literature. And let me end off the class. I'm going to quote, and I have to tell you who I'm quoting from. I've mentioned the name before, now let me just elaborate for a minute. I knew and know many great people in my life. Ani modela kadosh baruch hu. Rabbi Waxman, Rabbi Dr. Chaim Waxman, when he wrote a review of Washington, he writes, Rabbi Rakefik claims he knew, you know, he liked to say, how is it possible? Anyone I told you I knew, I knew. One of the greatest ladies I ever met was Dr. Nima Atlablum. Make believe you recognize the name, so the ignorant pass for the wise. Dr. Atlablum, let's begin at the beginning. Rabbi Chaim Hirschenhorn was her father. How many of you recognize the name? Rabbi Hirschen, son, I should say, not Horn, had a Talmud Hirschenhorn. Rabbi Hirschen, son. Rabbi Hirschen's son was a big Talmud Chacham, a Yudapesha who came to Israel, winds up in America, in the Jersey City area. He was very innovative, a Zionist, a Mizrachiite, ahead of his times. I can tell you some of his writings, they would have been very happy with him in Chovevei Torah. He very broad-minded. And overwhelmed by the beauty of America, that in America we have democracy, we have freedom, we can vote, there's respect for all different people, the melting pot. He was at home in the United States 100%. Wrote many from big Talmud Chacham. He had three very capable daughters. If you're not blessed with sons, and I often thank the Ribbono Shel Olam that I was not blessed with sons, because I would have been a nervous wreck, a kid, and you have to learn, you have to. I would have been a very bad father. Daughters, I never had a push, never, well, Baruch Hashem, they turned out great, but that's to my wife's credit, not mine. But God rewards you. I had 13 grandsons in a row before I saw a granddaughter. Don't forget that. What are the percentages? 13 grandsons. Can I and her? And they turned out great. But by then I was already smarter. I knew already how to deal with a, you don't have to tell a kid, don't take him by the ear. Give him a gift. Let him play. Let him be young. And let him learn. And let him say the Baruch Hashem. The Hirschen sons put a lot of effort into their daughters. One of them, you all know, Tamar, Rebbetzin Tamar, became the wife of Rabbi Dr. David DeSola Pool. And Charlie, when you grew up, if you saw a big volume, Portraits Edged in Stone, that was by this Ashkenazic woman who totally embraced the Sparta culture. It was about Spanish-Portuguese synagogue. And she and her husband, leading Orthodox rabbinic couple in New York City, Spanish Portuguese synagogue, pardon me for saying, ein kleinigkeit. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then there was another sister, Tehila Lichtenstein. Many of you don't want to admit you know the name. She was the first female rabbi in the United States. Married Tehila Lichtenstein, her husband Rabbi Morris Lichtenstein, together they were the founders of Jewish science. What Jewish science is all about, you can Google it. It's not our cup of tea. It's based upon Christian science. I can go into details, but it doesn't necessarily believe in a supernatural God. It believes in divine healing in the sense of right thinking. It's different than the Christian scientist because it permitted you to go to a doctor. If you know anything about Christian Scientology, you have to cure yourself, you have to think properly, and this is what she and her husband founded, and the whole concept of prayer is to find the sources within you. And when he died, she took over the movement. She preached like a regular rabbi. This was another sister. Now, Nina Adlerblum went on to become a PhD in education. She was, they say, the outstanding student of Professor Dewey. This is John Dewey, Columbia University. You're dealing here with this type of education and concepts. Hagadolim Asheba Aretz. And she was like a right hand to Professor Dewey. That was her inspiration. She evidently married very well. Not Papa has dough, but the husband has dough. She was a very prominent member of Jewish Center. Hold on 1 minute. Charlie, were you in Israel in 73? Do you remember when President Nixon came? Okay. This lady was in the news. Let's see if you recall. They cleaned out the King David Hotel. They just mentioned it again when Trump came. Cleaned out security. No one can mean the King David Hotel. The United States government is taking over the whole hotel. It's not that the King David lost money. Every room was taken over. The president comes, the entourage. I once saw in America, maybe it was Reagan going to the UN. I was in the summer, I was visiting, and there were like 127 cars in the procession, ambulances, fire engines. It's amazing. President of the United States, for anything that may happen, they were basically prepared outside of the Twin Towers being knocked down. Anyway, do you know that Nina Adlerblum, her final years, was spent in the King David Hotel? She was not that well anymore. She couldn't walk freely. And a special request was made of the President of the United States to allow this glorious American citizen, student of Professor John Dewey, to remain in the hotel, and permission was granted. It was the only room occupied by someone who was not in the president's party, and this was Dr. Nina Adlerblum, who we're talking about. Now, I'm quoting from her writings about Leo Young. It's reprinted from the Leo Young Jubilee volume, which was issued on his 70th birthday, and she absolutely writes about him with reverence. Rabbi Young belongs to a small group of men of our generation who have endeavored to maintain, Jewish integralness in the midst of a shattering, chaotic world. Through their efforts and decision and devotion, they joined the historical chain of immortals, the perpetual guardians of our edifice, who have carried the Jewish teaching from generation to generation. Here I should like to focus the camera solely on Leo Young, as to get a life-sized picture and put him in the perspective of Jewish tradition. Unlike some whose work is an accurate measure of their personalities, with him there is an overflow which transcends his activities, as important as they are, and his outstanding writings marked with originality, scholarship, and profound thinking. More important than these is the fact that his presence is so profoundly felt in American Jewish life. His ideas, his beliefs are contagious. His personality does something to one who has come in contact with him. One does not remain the same. This has been my own experience and that of many others. He communicates a warmth of his own which melts the coldness of even one whose Judaism has become frozen. The many facets and traits of his character blend so perfectly with the ideal Jewish whole that he reflects its image. His life has been living Judaism in all its essentials. He walks in the way of God. What God consciousness involves is a chief theme of his writings. This is not a story of adventure, exciting episodes and romances, but that of a serene stream watering and fertilizing the soil around it. I rest my case. Words like this were never written, not about Rakefe, not about Rabbi Lukstein, Rabbi Goldstein. Don't want to go even further. The man created an aura of reverence. And we're going to deal with his life story, and you'll see how, like a glove in a hand, the Jewish center is made for him, and he's made for the Jewish center. I want to thank the Ribbono Shel Olam for giving me strength and the ability to utilize the proper words to convey some beautiful ideas. And I tell you, when you study Torah like yesterday and study Torah history like today, you feel immortal. You're lost in time. You know that feeling? We dealt with Napoleon Sanhedrin, and we dealt with Reb David Zvi Hoffman, we dealt with the Rav. You're lost in time, and it's a beautiful feeling. I want to wish a hearty mazel tov once again to my dear Mori Tarragon, your wife. Feel nachas. And if only your parents could see the wonderful family. This is like, maybe they're looking on from upstairs. There is a minig in Europe that would go to the Beis Olam to invite all the forebears to come to the wedding. Yomo, what's troubling you?
It's not troubling, it's the Zohar. It's based on the Zohar Parshas Pinchas.
Based on the Zohar Parshas Pinchas directly from Yomo, and I want to ask Yomo, when will we be zeicher to go to the graves of your forebears and invite them to a certain wedding? I noticed you're giving me a benevolent smile. And what did we do today? Oh, we finished out the men's club, the sisterhood. I lived it. The bulletin. All right, you're right. Jack is right. There is a bulletin today, but it's not, I don't know. To me, it's not the same. A bulletin printed, I don't know, and here you download it and then you throw it away 2 minutes later. All right, but that's life. I do admit it has an advantage. Before I go to America, I download the shuls I daven in Queens, so I download the schedule for the month. I know in the minyanim, all right, there's a big advantage. The Americanization of the synagogue, I have to say, the modernization. We now have the Western house of worship, Orthodox, but Westernized. And now we need the rabbis. And we said a few words about Rabbi Dr. Leo Young. I think the words of Nina Adlerblum are very, very moving. She actually gave me a reprint of the article from the Leo Young volume. And I have a beautiful inscription here to Rabbi Aaron Rothkopf, dedicated to the perpetuation of Jewish learning, very best wishes, Nina A. Adlerblum. And they let us stay in the hotel. I mean, that's amazing. You can check it out. I'm not making it up. It was headlines in every newspaper in Israel. And they just mentioned it again, how they cleaned out the hotel. And I don't know how they went back in time, but in 1973, one person was allowed to stay. It might have been 74. I don't remember when Nixon came exactly, but it was after the scandal and he was running away from America. And Baruch Hashem, they let us stay. Now, schedule next week as normal. Pick up where we left off in both classes. I need more strength in the Sunday class. It's very sad. Rabbi Rubin was not there. Rabbi Dr. Steve Bressler can't come. Chaim Moshe's grandfather, Chaim Maltz, Herbie Maltz, is not coming now because Yitzchak Rubin is not driving. So I need more strength. But okay, if you have any rare. We have many, many freebies. First of all, are you reading? Are you reading? I have for you all the treasures. I spoke about one of the articles. It's fabulous on Hezda Haredi. You'll find it marked up. conversations, this is a different one. This one already is not for dealing with Chovevei Torah. This is dealing with Tanakh. And the new approaches in the state of Israel, a very, very fascinating volume. It sort of is dedicated to merging and synthesizing where the yeshiva meets the university, traditional and academic approaches to Tanakh study. And I'm proud to say about three or four of the people who wrote here are my own students. Okay? Now the freebies, then at the end I just want to show you some pictures. Here's Rabbi Arya Leibowitz, hired as REITS director of Smicha program. And people, do you know him? People tell me he's fabulous. Same Gomrim Alavat Halil. You know him? They tell me he's fabulous. Kanaim Hara. And they robbed him away from Lander College, I'm told. Not so happy to hear that, but why do we have to rob? But he's a good man, all right? Let him be in YU. Yeah, but he was in Lander, right? They're a little upset that he left, and I have, you know, loyalty to both for whatever reasons. Teaneck, New Jersey. This is the story of Natty Helfgott, that the rabbis have voted against him unanimously. The whole question of training female clergy, title rabbi. Natty's a great guy, but he is very liberal, and some of his viewpoints frighten me, but there's freedom of choice. This is a beautiful story. I spoke about Baron Lichtenstein in a shir a week or two ago, and Talmud Bram Wakes, who studied evidently in the Gush, talks about how he would, he had a friend, he's quoting my Talmud Ari Khan, that Ari Khan describes, one of my former fellow Talmudim, the yeshiva, devised a way to speak with Rabarin without disturbing or stealing his precious time. He would hitch a ride with him to Jerusalem, enjoying Rabarin's undivided attention for 45 minutes of the journey, and then turn around and take the bus back to the yeshiva. Mm-hmm. And there's a beautiful description here of Rabarin describing Rav Hutner. Beautiful description. What else do I have? Here, very interesting. I have a Talmud from the Lichtenstadter family, and this is his brother. Do you know who we're talking about? These are the two Jews visiting from America, like Bomatine, who saved the life of the Druze policeman when he was being attacked, stabbed in the Old City. And an Arab shopkeeper tried to take them off the Arab, let the guy kill the policeman. He was later arrested. And this is the story from Mishpacha magazine and Ami magazine. Very, very fascinating. The late Rabbi Mendel Baumgarten, this is Mamish family to me, he was he's a cousin to the Rebbe by marriage, married a Groner. His nephew was my best friend, Rabbi Dr. Tzvi Groner. Interesting, great Jews in Lubavitch. This is also Lubavitch, about survivors who created standards in the United States. This is fabulous. My mechutin, Izzy Ackerman, Zichrona Levracha, my son-in-law's father, he used to buy the Palestinian Post. The Palestinian Post is put out in the other part of Jerusalem, in Jordan, etc. And I say, why do you waste money? He says, I love it more than the Jerusalem Post. The Jerusalem Post, all you read, this problem, that problem, the other problem, the Palestinian Post, the Jews are going to kill us all. The Jews are the most powerful. He said, it's terrific. In Japan, they now believe that we are the smartest people in the world. It seems they read the Hitler's anti-Semitism. What's the famous book they translated into Japanese? Mein Kampf. And the elders of Zion, and they believe it in a positive sense. And now we've become heroes because we are the smartest people in the world. Here's a lady who was arrested for taking off her headscarf in Iran, sentenced to 3 years in jail, and somehow they smuggled her out with her daughter Very, very fascinating. Oh, what people go through in life. These are articles, I hate to say this, I never felt any prejudice, but if anyone is a Catholic today, I don't understand. These are four major articles from the New York Times about what's going on in the Catholic Church, about the cardinal who just was defrocked, a cardinal, about what's going on in Brooklyn, over 100, they listed names. Guts are up hidden. This is religion. I only hope any deviants in our world are listening to me and can know how to desist and be mekadosh shem shamayim b'yofen chiyuvi. Finally, you want to see why the Litvakim have lost out? and if Rebbe Noach Bornstein, Rabbi Yerucham Gerulik would be around, they wouldn't sleep at night? Step forward. These are pictures from Thursday night, but you have to come close. There's the Mashpia, surrounded by students. Dov, that's where you would be today if you would be 19, 20 years of age. That's the Mashpia, my Talmud. That's the Eish Kodesh Rebbe. Here he is. Look at him speaking. It's a dark picture. Yomo, wake up, Yomo. He took the pictures. And then they're too dark. Tell him to adjust his camera. Here, Lazim Shlafenitz, Azay. Yomo, why are the pictures so dark? You had a $1 million camera, right or wrong? My, here they are dancing. This is beautiful. If you come close, you can appreciate it. Here's the Mashpia with his eyes covered. You understand? This is what impresses. Rakepet gives a share. He's laughing, he's crying, his eyes are never covered. Here you see the Mashpia at work. And here, the ultimate insult to Rabbis Bornstein and Gerulik. There, Reb David Miller with the Mashpia, with our outreach people here, dancing with their eyes closed and so happy. Rabbi Yerucham, was sagt man? Nur Rab Neuach, was mir de lebt sein? Ay, what can I do? What can I do? Here's the Mashpia. Here's talking with Rab David Miller, the Shlita. Great people. This is the one. Here, the students singing, dancing. If I would announce a class under Rab, they'd walk 100 miles away. And here, Baruch Hashem. My dear students, I want to thank all of you for honoring me with your presence. Once again, it's a big week for two of us here, and Zolklal Yisrael hab mazel from uns, and we should have from them, and rak besora tovat yeshut v'nechamot aleinu v'al kol Yisrael. Remember, 2 weeks from today, we speak Russian in class. So please, you'll see what I'm pulling off. I hope all my plans work out. You'll see I pulled something off. Until we meet again in health and happiness, das vidanya.